Hi, today is September 24th, 2016. This is Mobile News Podcast number 176. I'm Todd Ogasso Ward, my good friend John Westfall. And we've kind of got a hodgepodge of stuff, and John's got a hodgepodge of stuff in his head.
Yeah, literally. And so I'd put out on our notes, and literally the ideas, not the actual mucus and whatever else is up in my head right now.
Yeah, you sound pretty good for a guy with a cold, by the way. And thank you.
It's a weird sort of thing I have. It's a congestion, but if I talk enough, it sort of loosens itself out.
Yeah, well, you know, and thanks for being thousands of miles away so you don't infect me, because I don't want a cold.
No problem.
Any rate. So a couple of things. One thing is, for those of you following the Windows preview builds, which is the next version of Windows, they released another one, 14,931. If you're in a fast ring, I think they've been releasing one a week. So the fast ring is literally quite fast now. And a couple of new features. You can now send SMS text messages with the Skype preview. I have not tried it. A native support for USB Audio 2.0. I don't even know what that means, but it sounded interesting. And the third feature is VirtualBox will crash at launch.
Yes, because that's what the feature we all want is Microsoft preventing us from running that pesky Linux or pesky older version of Windows. I mean, you can do it, just you have to pay for it. You know, this is VirtualBox that they're crashing, but you know, presumably VMware, you know, that still runs fine.
Right. But at any rate, I do you know what USB Audio 2.0 is? I saw that in the list, and I said, what is that? Maybe John knows. And I was too lazy to look it up, of course.
I assume it's just a new version of the protocol for sending audio over USB. Okay. But I don't know what it provides. I mean, I never had problems with audio over USB where I thought it's an upgrade.
Yeah, well, we'll look it up later. Maybe next week we can figure out if we actually have anything that's USB Audio 2.0 compliant. Next item is one of my favorite weather apps on my iPhone, Dark Sky, which is a paid app, if I recall. It's been so long. Anyway, they have a new web-based version, which is free, called Dark Sky, DarkSky.net. And it's a really nice, clean, simple interface on the iPhone. It's a nice, clean, simple interface on the web with some pretty neat mapping features. So try it out if you're a weather wonk or just have bad weather in your area now and then, or good weather.
Dark Sky is, you know, if you have very stable weather, mm-hmm. Dark Sky doesn't really do much for you. But if you live in a part of the country where, or if you're in a part of the year where you're at, it might go rainy, it might go snowy, it might go squawking bird, whatever it might be, Dark Sky really helps out with that.
Yeah, and we are in, where I live, we are in hurricane season until, end of November, sometime like that. Maybe November 1, I can't remember. But sometime in November is our end of our hurricane season. So we've still got a couple of month and a half left before we're out of the normal hurricane season. So, you know, it's always handy for me.
Yep.
Two Google items before we get to John's cold, which is the main topic of this podcast, believe it or not. That is, if you use Google Drive, as I do, it now includes natural language search. So in the search box, you can type in, you know, files with something or whatever, and it does a pretty good job, and it tells you what keywords it's keen on that you type. I don't know if it's rolled out to everybody, but it rolled out to mine after I read about the announcement. So, natural language search in Google Drive. If you don't have it now, it'll probably be there soon enough. They roll out a lot faster than, say, Microsoft's Outlook.com, which I still don't have in my account.
You get so bitter over Microsoft not giving you things, taking things away from you.
Spotwatch.
Yes.
And the final non-John Cold item is that Google announced an event on October 4th called Made by Google. And in fact, if you go to madeby.google.com, you see a little phone-shaped object. Might be a tablet, but it looks phone-shaped to me. It's in portrait mode, with various images flashing across the screen. So presumably they're going to announce the new, well, I don't know if it's going to be a Nexus, maybe a Pixel phone, whatever, the new phone, whatever it is, a Google-branded phone. And maybe a few other things. They announced a couple other things earlier this week, which didn't excite me enough to write down. like a new Wi-Fi router and things like that. But I'm looking forward to this. I don't plan to buy a new Google branded phone this calendar year, but I'm always interested to see. I'm still running a Nexus 6, which after the Nougat upgrade will not be eligible for any upgrades. So that's kind of sad.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm hoping the Chromebooks will the new Chromebooks, I should say, that are designed for running Android on Quest will be out by then. I mean, there are Chromebooks that do that now, but presumably they'll be, you know, new and better. I think Acer has a R13 or R14 I'm looking forward to. Any rate, so, John, sick. How long have you been sick?
So this started, let's see, it was Tuesday evening. I had a sore throat. My colds always go in stages. So, and thankfully, my body gives me about a half day off between each stage, which is really considerate of it. Tuesday evening, sore throat. Wednesday, sore throat. Worked from home a half day Wednesday, which is where I got the inspiration for what we'll talk about. And then Thursday felt pretty good most of the day. And then yesterday morning, congestion started and runny nose last night. And so I figured today's the last day of, like, congestion, runny nose. And then I'll probably move into stage three, which is, like, just exhaustion after the first two stages.
Oh, so you haven't peaked yet, so.
Well, I've peaked for whatever probably is contagious in me. I'm just riding out the storm now. So. Yeah. In any event, on Wednesday, like I said, I had an afternoon where I had no meetings that I had to go to, so I thought, well, I'll go home and I'll work slash rest and try to pull off this weird thing where I've got something going on. At that point, my voice was really shaky, so I thought I'd better not test my voice too much or else I'll lose it completely.
Right.
And thought, well, you know, how do you actually navigate being sick when you have a job where... Generally, in most professions these days, people are very leery of actually taking sick days. The idea that, you know, when you come back, you'll have mountains of work, and you're always connected if you want to be. So it's like, well, I could be doing that from my bedside, or I could be doing that from my table at home instead of doing it from my office. And so it was just sort of an idea of if you're going to be sick but deny it and work, how do you manage that? And if you decide you're going to just call off, how do you manage that so that you're actually truly disconnected? Short of just turning off all of your devices. I mean, that's always an option. If you want to totally disconnect, just turn off your phone, turn off everything, and literally power it down. But most people, when they're sick, you know, you kind of want to use your phone to, you know, browse Facebook or do something that reminds you that the rest of the world isn't sick. So I had a couple of thoughts as I was going through this, and Todd, you can join in because I'm assuming you've been sick at some point.
I have been at some point.
Yeah. The first thing I was thinking about is do not disturb mode. This is something that has been on the iPhone for a while. There are apps for Android that do it. Android phones have it as well, where basically you can turn it on and most of the dinging and messaging that would normally come in will be delayed or diverted so that you don't see it. This is actually... a must, because if you're laying there and thinking, okay, I'll just, you know, I'll relax for a little bit, or I'll close my eyes and, you know, sit in my chair and just try to relax a little, the second you hear that ding, if it's during work hours, most of us, it's almost, oh, well, wonder what happened. I wonder if it's something important. And so just don't even give yourself that worry by hitting this. And then that way you can always look over at your phone. The notifications are still there. They just aren't actively intruding on you.
And where is this do not disturb mode?
Do not disturb mode on the iPhone is actually right in the command center. When you pull up your options, there's a thing that looks like a little moon because it is usually used at night. Mm-hmm. And there are some settings with it that can really be useful. So on the iPhone, you can allow things from, say, your favorited contacts to come through and no one else. So if your family's in there, you can set do not disturb mode, but if they message you, they'll get through. You can set a setting for if someone calls you twice within 3 minutes, it'll get through. Mm-hmm. And now in iOS 10, there's the emergency bypass feature, which is actually, it's really hard to get to. So that's why most people don't notice it. You actually have to go into a contact record and go to edit the ringtone or the text tone. And then you can turn on emergency bypass, which means when this person texts you or this person calls you, it will not only bypass do not disturb mode, it will actually bypass the ringer silent switch on the side of the phone. So it will take advantage of all those privileged Apple APIs allow you to hear from this person if it's absolutely important.
I have never used that on my iPhone. You know, it is a good idea. I think on my Android phone, it goes into DND if your calendar, you know, has an event on it, and it'll automatically mute your phone and stuff. So that's kind of neat too.
Well, and the other time to use DND that I realized in the summer was when you're on vacation. You know, you're going to want to be using your phone to take pictures and, you know, share things and things like that with your friends, but you really don't want the work notifications coming in, too. And you could turn off your work accounts, but just a lot easier. When I was on vacation this summer, I just turned on DND the moment I left home and didn't turn it off until I got back home. And so that way it really kind of put me in a situation where I didn't feel that pushed as I normally would.
Yeah.
So DND is definitely something I think is vital. I also put this idea of a vague notification to your coworkers that you'll be unavailable, but not necessarily sick. When you say you're sick to people, if you're trying to actually do a little bit of work, you run into this weird psychology of, oh, I don't want to bother him. He's really sick. And you're thinking, well, I just, you
That's
know,
a good thing in really my opinion. Sick.
Well, it could be if you are really sick. If you're just, you know, my voice is just gone.
Right.
I'd rather you tell me about something and I will text back a response.
Right. Got it.
So sick is like this universal term, you know. You say it and some people will go, oh my God, you shouldn't be doing anything. Don't ever talk, you know, don't call, don't worry about it. Nothing's more important than your health. And other people will go, well, how sick is really sick? And if you're one of those people that is how sick is really sick, it can really get frustrating when you're asking your coworkers, hey, you know, is there anything I need to worry about? Oh, don't worry about anything. You're sick. Like, that might worry me more. You know, when I get back, a mountain of stuff, as I'm trying to recover, a mountain of stuff is going to fall on me.
So you know what we really need is we need some kind of a scale that pushes out to people when they try to contact us. You know, where like one is fine and five is I'm on death's door.
Mm-hmm.
And you can say, hey, you know, I'm kind of a, you know, three, which is pretty sick, right? Or two,
yeah, yeah.
Which is like maybe you know, you're functional, but not 100%. Yeah, that's what we need. So people kind of know, John's a four. He must have, you know, it's like pneumonia or something.
Yeah, I guess. It would be nice if we had some sort of unified way to communicate that. But unfortunately, we don't.
We'll work on it.
I did note that one of the features that you could use that you probably wouldn't think to use when you're sick is the vacation autoresponder or away message on your computer. And typically this would probably not be in the lines of, you know, I'm out of the office, and, you know, I'll return calls later. You could actually do the wonderful thing of, you know, I'm currently unavailable, but you can call so-and-so, or you can talk, you know, kind of diverting to other people on team, especially if they know what level you are in sick. So, okay, well, so-and-so contacted me. They would have normally contacted John. Well, I can probably pass this along to John because it takes him like a minute and he's not that sick versus, oh, it's going to take him like a half hour and he's at death's door.
Well, okay, so you and I, we have a project ahead of us and we need to develop a wellness. We'll call it wellness because it's more positive. Wellness self-assessment score that you can use to communicate with people how you're doing on any particular day and they know how to deal with you appropriately.
I think it's a great idea.
Okay.
I don't know how. I just think I'm trying to figure out how you could automate like reporting it so that
you know
it knows.
We
it uses Health Kit, you know. To
we may create
out your
the new health-based Facebook, you know.
Yeah, I might really be sick book.
Yeah, there you go, sick book. It's just sick book.
Yeah, sick book. So other features that could be very useful if you are trying to work, but you know, not work as hard as usual. The snooze feature in email, so Outlook on iOS.
I've never used that.
The only problem with Outlook on iOS is that it's local. So if I snooze something on Outlook, it takes it basically puts it in another folder, and then later it brings it back to my inbox. That doesn't work other places. So, you know, later if I go to another computer and it hasn't triggered it to go back, I'll still find it in that old folder, in that snoozed folder. But it's a good way of saying, you know what, tomorrow morning I'll fill up to this, and so I don't want it sitting in my inbox, but I also want to not see it until I feel better for it.
Yeah, and you know, I'm not quite sure why. I don't remember why I made the decision, but I do use Outlook for Android, but I don't use Outlook on the iPhone. I don't remember why I made that decision, but there it is. For some reason, I think Outlook works better than the default mail app on Android, I guess.
Well, it's maybe...
And you use it a lot, right?
The reason I use it, honestly, is it gives me push access to my Gmail. Which is something I don't have anymore because it's not grandfathered. In fact, I have a whole workaround on my website. It's one of my most popular pages that talks about setting up a proxy iCloud account and all that. And that works okay, but I've actually... The other feature that Outlook really has that I like, and this is actually a really good one when you're sick and you don't want to pull out your actual computer, is it can interface with Dropbox and Google Drive. And so if you're like me, I keep all of my work files in Dropbox. And so it's, you need this? Okay, it's two taps on my phone versus having to get up, go to my computer, attach it to an email, send it out, etc.
Yeah.
Snooze feature, delay send features in email. If you really want to try to trick your coworkers into thinking you're okay and you're going to take a nap between 2 and 4, just have your emails kind of go out between 2 and 4. That's one way to look like you're not on death's door.
You know, on a related note, for Dilbert fans, you might recall that, and by you, I mean Dilbert fans, you might recall that Wally, Dilbert's best friend, I guess, used to send out, might have used something like this, because he used to send out the best of Wally email when he had his in-cubicle vacations. It would sort of, he automated the process of sending out some of his best emails from the past at, you know, intervals, so people would think he's actually doing stuff.
Yep. There are definitely ways to fool people into thinking you're not at death's door. I guess we've moved now into the, if you are really at death's door, how do you disconnect? Well, like I said, you could take the extreme approach of powering down your computers and tablets, but that will also mean that if you really do want to know what's going on, you have to power them completely back up. Do not disturb mode, silent mode. All of those things are kind of your friend at that point. You could even turn notifications off permanently and then turn them back on later. But in the end, it's really something that – it's a weird topic for us to talk about, I know, but it seemed like an interesting one today. Really, it's one of those
– Also, we had no news we were interested in.
Exactly. Well, you know, Google needs to do more exciting stuff. But in the end, it's a cost-benefit sort of thing. I think it's a weird sort of psychology we're in today where it is really hard for professionals in most jobs to just take sick time. Because it's, well, I can do a little bit, I can do this and that. But then you have to think about if you do stretch it, do you actually get the rest that you need to recover? And yeah, will it actually end up being that you're sick longer than you normally would? So sometimes you have to say, you know what, I need to leave those 20 emails in the inbox for tomorrow morning because answering them now is going to extend my sickness probably another 2 or 3 days because I really need to rest right now.
Yeah, that's a good point.
So yeah, take care of yourself. Do use these features, especially if on the John and Todd health scale you are a 1 and not a 5 or a 6 or 7.
Yeah.
Only went to 5, so if you're at a 6 or 7, you probably don't have to worry about work anymore ever.
Yeah, you know, it's an interesting thing, because if you're not too sick, it's not too hard to get some work done. You know, like maybe you get up in the morning and you're not feeling too hot and you sleep in an extra hour or two, try to, you know, get your fever down or stop coughing or whatever it is you're doing, and then maybe do an hour or two of work and, rinse and repeat the cycle.
Yeah.
But as your illness gets, you know, 1 being really well and 5 being that death's door, as you get closer to 5, it becomes more and more difficult to, you know, like if you have a really bad flu, let's say, right, which would be maybe a 3.5 or something. If you have a really bad flu, you know, you're going to survive. Well, you may not think it at the time, but I mean, flu does kill people, right? But
you know, it does.
It's not to be taken lightly. But most of us recover from the flu if we're reasonably healthy before we get it. So you know, you have a flu, you're really not doing well. You know, you've got a fever, your body aches. You know, you're maybe even dizzy, whatever. It's hard to do work when you're really that ill. You know, again, not so ill that you may need hospitalization, but little enough that you're really opening your eyes is a real, power power activity for you. And it becomes an interesting problem. I know, you know, if you're not sitting up a lot, or you just don't want to open your eyes, and you start, you know, you start wondering if voice activation actually does become important at that point.
Well, it's interesting. I was telling my wife yesterday that when I take, usually when I'm sick, I take some form of pseudoephedrine. That's what I can, you know, get my congestion to go away.
Right.
But it only works if I'm moving around. If I lay in bed, everything kind of just clogs up, and it feels really horrible.
I know what you
mean. But if I get up and walk around, all of a sudden I feel better. So it's a weird sort of thing where I guess the takeaway point of this whole conversation is ones are not the same as fives. You know, if you treat it always like, oh, as soon as you're sick, you should never go to work, you shouldn't do anything, you should stay in bed the whole time, you might actually not get some of the restorative abilities of wandering around or, you know, staying in motion. But if you are at a five, you probably should not be trying to dash off those emails.
Yeah.
I guess the takeaway message, the philosophical nugget in all of this is think about your illness as a continuum and not as sick or not sick.
Mm, you're right. It's not a binary. And it's, you know, how well do you feel? And you're right. Sometimes when you're just kind of laying around, says, man, if I just get up and do something, I feel better. On the other hand, if you're communicable, don't go to work. You know, don't be that patient zero. I know I always, you know, I always want to put like a hazmat bubble around some people when they come in. And I know some people feel like about me because I do that. You know, I complain about the people who do that, and yet I do it too sometimes.
Oh, I think everyone does it to some extent. I mean, especially the worst part is you're most contagious at the very beginning. So yeah. It's like the day before you ever know that you are sick, that's right. The day you're actually right. Probably spreading a bunch of germs. And then right. By the time you're in full-blown sick, you're probably not as communicable as you were. So
yeah, that's the problem, right? You're like, I feel not great, but I don't feel bad. You know, so you kind of just wander in, you sneeze on people without covering yourself. Yeah. Well, you know, and it's probably why we should adopt the Asian culture's habit of wearing face masks. Also, not shaking hands. I've been trying to convince people of that for years. We should bow at each other. Shaking hands is probably the number one method we transmit cold and flu and things like that. You know? But that effort of mine has been a total failure here in America.
I say we just give thumbs up.
You know, that would work for me, too.
Yep.
That would work for me, too.
The only problem is if you give a thumbs up and the other person bows, because they probably didn't see your thumbs up.
Oh, wow. That sounds painful. Definitely painful.
And if you happen to do a thumbs up and they bow too far and their eye goes into your thumb, that's really going to be awkward. Yeah.
Okay, on a less awkward note, I just updated my iPhone 6 Plus since my 7 is still not arrived. But since you've had yours for a whole week now, how do you feel about it?
It feels like my 6 Plus with some cool new features. I really do like the Taptic Engine on the home button.
Yeah.
That really it has a different feel, but it has a very familiar feel to it. Mm. I've been very kind of cautious about what apps I've been installing because I did start this one fresh. I didn't do a restore off of any of my older versions. So I've been trying to not get into like app overload state where I was before. Thankfully, some of the apps I had I don't need anymore. So the HomeKit app controls my lights. I don't need the vendor-specific app for that. Mm-hmm. So there are some really nice sort of speed increases that I've noticed. Overall, I've been very happy with it. Photos, I haven't really played too much with the photos, but I can see, you know, differences in quality if I compare the 6 Plus to the 7 Plus to the iPhone 5 that I was using for a few weeks. You can really sort of see the evolution of photo differences.
Have you tried live photos?
I did, and I kind of turned them off pretty quickly because I wasn't quite sure how I was going to be backing them up.
Yeah.
But I do like them. I do think that it'd be fun, especially around the holidays. You know, you're taking pictures at parties and things like that. It's kind of cool to have that little bit of live photo there. But honestly, most of my videos rage in like the 2 second, 3 second sort of just quick videos. So I would probably not use them as much as others.
Yeah, I don't know how I'm going to use it either. I have live photos, and people are wondering why we're talking about it as if it's new. And that's because John and I did not upgrade to the 6S series last year, where Live Photos was introduced. And neither of us had it for the last 2 years, except on our iPads, oddly enough. At least I think your iPad Pro has Live Photos. I don't know mine does.
I don't think mine does. My big Pro.
Okay, it might only be the iPad Pro Junior. But the iPad Pro Junior, the 9.7-inch device, does have Live Photos. And I've taken a bunch of Live Photos with it. I believe Google Photos backs it up. Though I'm not sure if it separates the JPEG from the MOV mini video file. But I believe it does back it up as an actual animated or, you know, video photo. So I'm looking forward to getting it because there's pets and wildlife and that sort of thing. That's always fun to do. Yeah, and if you have small children, which neither of us do, at least my small child is a senior in college, so I really don't see much of her. She's several
thousand
miles away.
And I have a lot of freshmen in college that are my small children.
Your small children. But at any rate, I'm looking forward to it. I'll be curious to see if I'm like you and turn it off, or if I just leave it on. For me, the thing is, you know, how much space does it take? So I need to do some. I should take a look at my iPad Pro Junior and see how big those files are to get a feel for what kind of storage requirements I have. Because I just checked my iPhone 6 Plus, which is now 2 years old, and I have, let's see. And this is really a count of videos and photos, I think. No, it's separate. I have 5,007 photos, 469 videos recorded on my iPhone 6 Plus after using it for 2 years with 1.88 gigabytes available. So, you know, I take a lot of photos and, reasonable amount of video.
It is probably worth me talking about where my usage is, because I did drop down from the 64 gig to a 32 gig.
Oh, yeah.
And I currently, with my, I have one playlist that I sync up to my devices. It's basically an auto playlist that has anything more than 2 stars in my collection, because I really am very stingy with star ratings. Probably 90% of my music collection is 1 star.
Wow.
Well, you know, I figure 1 star means I like listening to this. 2 stars mean I like listening to it more than the 1 star. You know, you gotta have gradations here. But right now I have 3.6 gigs available. So I'm getting close, but if I look, a lot of that is 6.9 gigs in music and then 6.6 gigs in photo and camera. And photo and camera, they should optimize at some point. So I'll be curious to see when that kicks in, at what point Apple finally goes, hey, you should probably clear out some of these local copies so that you don't go over.
Yeah, so it sounds like if you reduce your onboard music, it won't be too bad.
Yes. Oh, and Todd, you'll be very happy to hear this. I went back to using Overcast instead of the podcast app.
Oh, really?
Because my extremely stupid reason for not using it, that was that my paid...
the ad thing?
Ad thing went away. I was actually able to restore it this time, and so I have no ads. So I've gone back to using it.
Okay. So that was the only reason. It had nothing to do with operations or bugs or...
Oh, no. It was extremely petty and stupid. It was really just that I had paid for the app. My birds agree with me completely.
Absolutely.
I had paid for the app when it was a paid app. And then when it went to a subscription model, I thought, okay, that's cool. But, you know, that wasn't really the deal I signed up for.
Right.
And I tried to do a restore at some point, you know, restore my purchases. And that didn't take care of the ads. And then... I complained about it on here, I think at least one time, and maybe Marco heard that. And this last time when I installed it, I did the restore purchases, and the ads went away. So it's really an exercise in understanding psychology. It is the stupidest reason not to use an app. It really, really is the stupidest reason. It's a good app. I like the way it's programmed. I like supporting independent developers. But it just gets you when, you know... You kind of feel like your purchase was in vain, and you can't get that back. It's stupid, but
it's understandable. It's, you know, people are not logical critters. I've learned that over the years.
I study it for a living. So
that's right. That's your job.
I'm very well aware of it.
Okay. And I am aware that MobileViews Podcast 176 is nearing its end. There really wasn't a lot to going on this week, you know, at least in the tech world.
Literally, after talking for, you know, a half hour, the congestion feels a little better.
Oh, that's good. I'm glad I helped.
It's therapeutic.
All right. Anyway, we will be back next time. Hopefully, John will feel better, and hopefully I will not have caught his cold long distance somehow. And we'll talk to you next time.